Translation. No one can overcome the Supreme Personality of Godhead's illusory energy, Maya, which is so strong that it bewilders everyone, making one lose the sense to understand the aim of life. That same Maya, however, is subdued by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who rules everyone and who is equally disposed toward all living entities. Let us offer our obeisances unto him. Purport. The prowess of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, certainly controls all living entities, so much so that the living entities have forgotten the aim of life. Nate vidu svartagatim hi Vishnum. The living entities have forgotten that the aim of life is to go back home, back to Godhead. The external energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead gives all conditioned souls what appears to be an opportunity to be happy within this material world. But that is Maya. In other words, it's a dream that is never to be fulfilled. Thus every living being is illusioned by the external energy of the Supreme Lord. That illusory energy is undoubtedly very strong, but she is fully under the control of the transcendental person who is described in this verse as Paresham, the transcendental Lord. The Lord is not a part of the material creation, but is beyond creation. Therefore, not only does he control the conditioned souls through his external energy, but he also controls the external energy itself. Bhagavad Gita clearly says that the strong material energy controls everyone, and that getting out of her control is extremely difficult. That controlling energy belongs to the Supreme Personality of Godhead and works under his control. The living entities, however, being subdued by the material energy, have forgotten the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Om Agyana Timirandasya Ginandana Slakya Shakshuran Minitamyana Tasmai Sigurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sigarosi Yutapada Kamalam Sigurun Vaisnavamscha Sirupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvetam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sirada Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sivisakan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagat Pate Gopisa Gopika Kanta Radhakanta Namastate Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radha Vrindavaneshwari Visabhana Sutta Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpa Turubhyacha Kripa Sindhuvyacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaisnavebhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the illusory energy Maya is very strong, so it is described. So strong that it bewilders everyone. So that is interesting, because there are three energies described of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, namely his Antaranga Shakti, his Tatastha Shakti, and his Bahirangi Shakti, or the internal energy, which is the energy that's manifest in the spiritual world. Then the Tatastha Shakti, the living beings, who are the intermediate energy. And then the external energy. So this external energy, Maya, although it is of a lower nature, of a lower order than the living being, is more powerful than the living being. How is that? It is said because the material energy is a reflection of the original spiritual energy. And because the spiritual world is unlimited, therefore the reflection of that unlimited spiritual world is almost unlimited. and therefore Maya is creating almost unlimited varieties of temptations, somehow or other. She knows exactly what we think and what we desire. Because Maya is not only outside of us, if that was all there was to it, Maya is within. That is the difficulty. Therefore, she knows exactly every thought we have, every desire we have, and provides accordingly. So in this way, it becomes very tricky and very difficult to overcome the illusory energy, which just offers us the irresistible opportunity. You know, you could let anything go except this one dream that is just now right in front of you. You know, I mean, be out of your mind if you let it go. May never come again. You'd never forgive yourself. So we can be Krishna conscious tomorrow and just for a day have a vacation. Or other varieties. Let us say that, yes, Krishna, yes, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, yes, devotional service, yes, the Bhagavad Gita, yes, I'm in full faith in that, but I don't have faith in myself that I will be able to do it. I have doubts about my own power to actually follow it all. Of course, indirectly, that is having doubt in the power of Krishna, in the power of the Bhagavad Gita, in the power of Krishna's words to reform us. Do we think that we are so fallen that even Krishna cannot do anything about it? Because it means that when we think that this process is so difficult, I don't know if I can make it, then it means that we think that we are the doer. We still think we are the doer, that actually the success of this process depends on us. It's not like that. It is actually a matter of taking shelter. Simply take shelter. The shelter is so potent and powerful. We simply have to just take shelter and automatically, prakasanti mahatmanaha, automatically the transformation will take place by the transcendental influence of the Supreme Lord. So in this way, through taking shelter of Krishna, can we easily be saved of the material energy. Krishna is certainly present in our life directly. Krishna is personally taking charge. What happened to the microphone? Something strange. Personally taking charge of the life of his devotee. It is said that when a devotee, Srila Madhavacharya is saying, when a devotee is saying that, Krishna, I am yours, that from that day on, Krishna will fully accept that devotee under his personal care. So in this way, Krishna is certainly directly involved in the life of his devotee. Krishna is also present within the heart. He is known as Chetya Guru, or the Guru who resides within the heart. And sometimes it is mentioned that in the Bhagavad Gita, in the verse or in the purport to the verse Tesam Evanukampartam, Srila Prabhupada gives an explanation, and he explains that the spiritual master is giving directions to the disciple of how to become free from the influence of the material energy, and then he can make advancement and eventually go back to Godhead. However, if sometimes, even in spite of getting all the good instructions, A disciple is not following actually these instructions, not taking proper advantage of these instructions, then Krishna will make arrangements. From within and without, Krishna will make arrangements. Krishna either will give us transcendental knowledge from within, or in our life, he pulls the carpet from under us, and when our whole life tumbles upside down, then what can we do? Then suddenly Krishna is what is left. Like there was one devotee in the congregation in Amsterdam who was thinking, shall I move in the temple? Shall I not? Shall I not? And he was just going on and on and never coming to a conclusion. So he never moved into the temple. And then the devotees convinced him, let's come to Vrindavan. So while he was in Vrindavan, he got the news that his house burned down. The whole house, right? You know. And when your house burns down, it's not only like that your house burns down, but, you know, all those irreplaceable things, right? The picture of your grandmother, right? The one, you know, of which you have no copy. That one. Ashes. You know, ashes. So, like, irreplaceable things, you know, just ashes. His whole life had turned to ash. And he was homeless, so he had no other option than to move in the temple. So Krishna saves us in Maya, or protects us from Maya, I mean, in sometimes even against our will. Right? Oh, yes. Yeah. Even when we... No, I'm fine. Then Krishna makes some arrangements for us. So Krishna is very merciful. He is very kind. If he would just leave us alone to get tired of sense gratification, we might never get tired. Right? Sense gratification is such a thing that even when you get tired of it, you think you can still handle a little more, if you know what I mean. Yeah. There is no end to the varieties of Maya. Almost no end, I said. Almost unlimited. Therefore, the living being in the material world is sometimes described as Nichabada, or eternally fallen. Not eternal. That would be eternal damnation. That would be go to hell forever, which we don't have in our theology. In the Bhagavatam theology, we don't find any hell that lasts forever. In fact, it says hell lasts much shorter than the stay in the heavenly planets. But it feels very long. So, therefore, it's not a recommended condition of life. Once I was in a temple and at 10:15 at night, the phone rang, and usually I ignore them, like every other devotee, right? And as we have all experienced in trying to call the temple, no one picks up, right? But this night, I don't know what it was, the super soul just some or other steered me to pick up the phone. I picked up the phone and a lady says, "It's not true, it's not true, it's not true that all my family members are going to hell." I said, "All right, I could see." Calm down, lady, calm down, relax, you know, count to 10, everything is, it's not that bad, you know what I mean? I had turned into the helpline. And it turned out that she had met a book distributor, a mother of three children, who, you know, had such a nice exchange with her, and then had given her this book called The Last Chance, you know, which somebody was inspired to compile. And if you look at it, it's an intense book, actually. Second Chance. An intense book, you know, there's quite a bit of hell in it. So she started reading the book at home and came across some pages that indeed describe the kind of people that go to hell. And she realized, that's my father. That's my mother. That's my brother. That's my uncle. That's my auntie. That's the whole family. So at that point, it became more than she could handle. So is that how Krishna deals with the living beings in Maya, that he punishes them? He's a punishing God. If you just show interest in Maya, Krishna is there, like Michelangelo's God seated on the cloud, pointing down. Ready. Ready for you, sinner. Is that the way it is? No, actually, Krishna, it is a sign. The fact that there is hell, the lady said to me, I don't believe that hell exists. I just don't believe it. And that's a very modern concept, right? Modern people don't believe that hell exists, because if they would, you know, they would surely go there. So it's better to kind of delete it, you know, control, delete, no more hell, right? That was easy. But the truth of the matter is that hell does exist, but it does not, it's not a symptom of a cruel and harsh God, right? But rather a symptom of a very merciful and compassionate Supreme Lord, who cannot just sit there and watch the living entity staying in the material world forever, life after life after life, and not coming to his senses. All right, and a little suffering. Yes. Yes, I'm very interested in spiritual life. Suddenly, a wake-up call. So in this way, we see how the suffering in the material energy is a mechanism of mercy of Krishna. And that's important, because we need to contemplate. We need to contemplate on the mercy of Krishna. Otherwise, how can our heart melt? How can we appreciate him? And how can one develop love of God if we are not appreciating how merciful and kind he is? Only if someone is very kind and merciful to us do we develop love. So it's important to contemplate on the merciful nature of Krishna. Krishna, as I said, is directly involved in our life. But Krishna is also indirectly involved in our life. And in that way, evam parampara praptam imam rajasyo vidu sukalineyata mahata yoganasta parantapa. He comes in that form of the disciplic succession, in the form of the Vaishnavas, who are, and of course especially the Acharyas, who are perfect examples of Krishna's teachings, who have become the embodiments of the scriptures. So in this way, Krishna is also present. So in that way, I wanted to connect this verse to Srila Madhvacharya, because it is, after all, the disappearance day of Madhvacharya. And that's not just another name on the Vaishnav calendar. Not just, disappearance day, Madhvacharya. Because after all, we are in the Brahma Madhava Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya. We have that connection with Madhvacharya. That connection with Madhvacharya may exist in two ways: in a historical way and in a philosophical way. Historically, we can trace the line back through Madhavendra Puri, the Param Guru of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who came in the Madhava line. And in this way, we can see there is a historical connection to Madhava Sampradaya. And then philosophically, we can also see the connection with Madhvacharya. Now, when we speak about the cyclic succession, there is an idea, maybe a little overly simplified idea, that a cyclic succession means that a guru instructs his disciple, trains his disciple, and then the disciple gives the very same knowledge as he has heard it without any alteration to his followers, and who then in turn assimilate the same knowledge and exactly as they have heard it in an unaltered way, they pass it on to the next generation. And in this way, we have a chain of, like, an unbroken chain of guru and disciple that, you know, can be traced back to Krishna, isn't it? Does that sound like the concept of the disciplic succession? It does, huh? It does, but it doesn't work like that. I'm so sorry to spoil the fun here. It doesn't exactly work like that. It is slightly more complex. When we look at Madhvacharya, we see that on the essential principles, we see that Madhvacharya and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are in complete agreement. Madhvacharya makes the point in his nine pramayas. He makes the point that Vishnu is the supreme. Oh, yes. Yes, we accept. Of course, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Krishna is the supreme. Like Vishnu, Krishna. It's all the same Vishnu Tattva. So in that way, no problem. And after all, wasn't it Madhvacharya who is worshipping Krishna? Don't we have Udupi Krishna in the headquarters of Madhvacharya, that deity of Nartaka Gopal? He is called Nartaka Gopal, the dancing Gopal. Nartaka Gopal. The story goes that Madhvacharya was a very powerful personality, even from his very childhood on. It said whenever his mother called him urgently, he would just appear in the sky, from the sky, poof, right there. He was extremely strong and powerful. Even later, when he was an adult, he was very strong. There was a gunda, you know, the gunda's gangster, a gunda who challenged him. And Madhvacharya said, if you can lift my toe, you know, and the gunda couldn't, with all his force and might, he could, with two hands pulling, he could not lift the toe of Madhvacharya. So Madhvacharya is very powerful. The biography of Madhvacharya, called Madhva Vijay, so Madhvacharya, the biography is called the Madhva Vijay. So there it is mentioned that Madhvacharya is an incarnation of Vayu. And Srila Prabhupada also repeats that. Yeah. So anyway, we're dealing here with not an ordinary personality, and a very interesting person, because, you know, if you look at our disciplic succession, talking about the disciplic succession, the Brahma, Madhva, Gaudiya, Vaishnava, Sampradaya. Okay, then we go. Starting with Krishna, Brahma is getting transcendental knowledge from Krishna. Fine. Then who's next?
That's Narada Muni, right? The mental son of Brahma. And who is after that? Vedavyas. All right, that's in the early days. And who's next? It's Madhvacharya.
But isn't there something like 4,000 to 5,000 years in between Vyasadeva and Madhvacharya? That's kind of a big gap, right?
Well, yes. Then, how are we counting this as a bona fide connection? Is this one of those things we don't talk about? So, we do this morning, but don't tell everybody. So, what is the case is that somehow or other Madhvacharya is supposed to have met Vyasadeva in the Himalayas. It is stated that Vyasadeva is still alive in the scriptures, as mentioned, still residing in the Himalayas in a cave, and Madhvacharya actually met him. Yeah. Many devotees went to the cave of Vyasadeva, but nobody was home. Right? They never saw him. But in this case, that Madhvacharya actually met him. He did. And not only did he meet him, he presented to him his commentary that he wrote on the Bhagavad Gita. And Vyasadeva made a correction. He made one correction. And it says, like, that counts as, like, okay, the connection, where he formally accepted him and instructed him. And in that way, he is counted as the next in line from Vyasadeva, believe it or not. So we're dealing with a very mystical personality here, not your average, your average spiritual master, but an extraordinary one. So like I said, Madhvacharya, as his philosophy is summarized in the 9 pramayas, 9 statements of proof. I'm not good in lists of 9. My memory is, I forget telephone numbers, email addresses, and everything. So lists of 9 don't work for me. So, and I'm too lazy to bring a device so I can read it to you. So, but the first one is to accept that Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the second one is that the Jiva is the eternal servant of that Supreme Lord. And the third one is that Veda is the source of proof. Right. So all these points and more were also accepted by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the very same points. It's Baladev Vijayabhusan, who's an interesting person. Baladev Vijayabhusan was once sent to a debate in Jaipur by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. To represent the Gaudiyas in that debate with the followers of Ramanujacharya. It's some philosophical differences. And Ramanuja said, we will not speak to any Gaudiya because they don't even have a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, so we will not speak to them. But then Baladev happened to be of a double identity because he was also an initiated sannyasi in Madhva Sampradaya. So then he pulled out his Madhva visiting card. Then they had to speak to him, right? What to do. And, so Baladev wrote a commentary to Govinda Bhasya. And Baladev later also wrote another book called Prameya Ratnavali. And the Prameya Ratnavali is the point where Baladev makes the case for the connection between the Gaudiya and the Madhva Sampradaya. So it's a very important book. It's not just, there are so many books out there these days that, you know, that decorate our shelves, and how can we read them all? Right? But this Pramaya Ratnavali is an important book because it establishes the connection, the formal connection with our Sampradaya. And there he goes into these nine Pramayas and explains how they are also part of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. So in that way we can see that Madhva Acharya and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are completely lined up, and Baladev Vijayabhusan establishes it. But how does it work, this disciplic succession? In Jiva Dharma, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur gives a metaphor about the Sampradaya, and he says it's like a lotus that is gradually opening. And that is an interesting key point when we are looking at the Sampradaya. The lotus that is gradually opening. So at the time of Madhvacharya, the lotus was not yet opened so much. Therefore, Madhvacharya, he of course came after Sankaracharya, who came after Buddha. Buddha took people away from the Vedic literatures and said, just follow me, and preached ahimsa, and people who had slaughtered so many animals in the name of Vedic sacrifices now became non-violent. Then Sankaracharya gave an explanation of the Vedic literatures, which was very similar to Buddhism. So he brought all these Buddhists back, so it is explained. And then Madhvacharya, Ramanuja and Madhvacharya, brought people back to personalism. A step at a time, the lotus is gradually opening. So Madhvacharya, we find, did not really say much about the eternal concert of the Lord. What is absent in Madhva's teachings is the concept of an eternal female concert of the Supreme Lord. Even Madhvacharya says in his writings that Lakshmi is Jiva. So that's quite something. I mean, if Lakshmi is Jiva, then the whole female counterpart of the Lord is not there. And in Udupi, not there. Krishna is there, but no Radharani, not there. They worship only Krishna. They were worshipping Krishna. We can see in Udupi how in the worship of Krishna, on all the appearance days of the various Vishnu tattvas, they dressed the deity like that particular incarnation, that particular avatar. Like on Matsya's appearance day, the Lord wears a fishtail. Right? And so on. We got a parasol and Vamanas and like that. You know, every these appearance days are celebrated with great pomp. The thing is, though, that philosophically they are understanding that Krishna is the incarnation of Vishnu, that Vishnu is the supreme. Vishnu is the origin. And that Krishna is a manifestation of Vishnu. So we see there are some differences also. There are some differences. But we don't make a big deal about that. Right? It's not our business to jump on the Madhvas and to just go in a big wrestling match, as sometimes we've seen on the internet. You know, there was some little wrestling. But then at one point, one of the leading acharyas just dismissed it. Right? Said like he dismissed it. He dismissed it. This is not our business. Let's not do this. We don't do this. Right? We don't. Because when we want to wrestle, then we stand side by side, shoulder to shoulder, and wrestle with impersonalism. Right? So with the Madhvas together, we knock the impersonalists over the head again and again. And how come, if the Supreme Personality of Godhead, right, has now forgotten his eternal identity, then it means that the Supreme Personality of Godhead has become overpowered by Maya. And how is it possible that the Supreme Personality of Godhead can be overcome by Maya? That would make Maya more powerful than the Supreme Lord. On the nose. So in this way we stand side by side to expose Mayavad. But some differences are also there. We simply take this as the gradually unfolding of the lotus, and we simply take it that Vayu or Madhva Acharya, it's not that Madhva Acharya did not, he may have known, you know, it's not that necessarily he did not know. Madhva Acharya was so learned in scripture, but he simply didn't touch this. He didn't touch the rasa tattva. He didn't touch all this. He left it to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because after all, only Krishna himself can reveal this particular aspect of the intimate love of God which is experienced by the residents of Vrindavan, as we have heard. So in this way, there are also some differences between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Madhvacharya. But the main points, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, those points, and we are his eternal servants, those points are the main points, and we are in complete agreement. And in this way, the Sampradaya is gradually opening and becoming more and more revealed. And then I'm thinking, like, how the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is spreading. Sometimes I have a metaphor which is the Vedic literatures and all the Vedic knowledge are like a mountain. And this mountain is just situated on the ocean of transcendental mercy. And the waves of mercy are washing on the beach at the foot of the mountain. And as waves do, they reach their furthest point on the land and then flow back and leave a water mark on the land. So in this way, the line between mercy and the line between standards is there on the beach. Then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy came, and he extended that mercy to further upon the beach than it had ever been, and it became more liberal than ever. Right? It said the Vedic culture, many rules and regulations. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, more liberal, right? More liberal. And then on that ocean of mercy came a very great powerful wave, the Prabhupada wave, and he extended that line even further, further than before. If you read, for example, the Hari Bhakti Vilas, in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, you see things that if you put out a ghee lamp, right, then the next life blind. Did anyone ever put out a ghee lamp? I mean, really? I mean, on purpose, you know, just like put it out. It's like, okay, Hari Bhakti Vilas for you. Did you ever eat on Ekadasi? You did. French fries and all those things. Did you? Chips. Yes, well, it says in the Hari Bhakti Vilas, then next life, a hog. a blind hog in this case. What to do? Yeah, what to do? Oh, well, you know. So what to do, you know? What about that? But then we're seeing that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, right, was already saying that there are some elements in the Hari Bhakti Vilas which are not essential, right? They are part of Karma Kanda. We do not worry about that. And then we see that Prabhupada doesn't make a big point of it at all, right? You know, like in the Gaudiya Math we see in India, papaya sabjiya, papaya. Only papaya, yes, yeah, on Ekadasis. And we, you know, like, it's more opulent on Ekadasi than any other day. That's ISKCON, you know. That's all right. That's Prabhupada's mercy, who is embodying Lord Chaitanya's mercy, who is completely understanding Lord Chaitanya's mood, and who has opened the lotus a little further, who has revealed a little more that mercy of the Supreme Lord. So in the Sampradaya, there is the transcendental Siddhanta is not changing, but sometimes the lotus is opening, closing, and sometimes it's opening. And now we're in a phase where it's opening more and more, right, to its maximum extent. And in the Sankirtan movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, this lotus is now fully opening. Sreya kairiva chandrika vitaranam vidavadu jivanam. In this first verse of the Siksasta Kam, there is a description. There are a few translations. One translation is saying that something about the benediction moon, and another translation is speaking about a lotus that opens. It is said in the commentaries of the Acharya that actually there is a white lotus that opens not during the day, but it opens in the moonlight during the night. And so it is said it is that lotus, that white lotus, which is referred to, which means that in the night of Kali Yuga, in the darkest time, the lotus will fully open. The lotus of the mercy of the Lord will fully open. So in this way, the Sampradaya is carrying on transcendental knowledge from one spiritual master to the next, and sometimes the knowledge remains a little hidden with the lotus more closed, and other times, and when the Lord Himself comes, then it fully opens. So in this way, we can understand that now, it's more easy than it ever was to overcome the illusory energy. It's never been as easy, because it is said in Laghu Bhagavatamrita what happens in those Kali Yugas when Lord Chaitanya does not appear, because Lord Chaitanya appears once in a day of Brahma. What happens in the other Kali Yugas, this in the day of Brahma? In the other 999 Kali Yugas, what happens? It said then there's also an incarnation of the Lord. He is blackish, and he's also preaching Harinam Sankirtan. Then what is the difference with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? The difference is the added mercy that in this particular yuga where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, Katanchana Smrite Yasmin Duskaram Sukaram Bhavet, that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu makes things that are difficult, he makes them easy. Therefore, this Kali Yuga, amongst all the other ones, is special. Now, you chant a little Hare Krishna and already the result is there, very quickly. Therefore, now, anyone can become Krishna conscious. Now, anyone can go back to Godhead. Anyone. As Prabodhananda Saraswati Thakur explains in many verses, right? He says, even those who have never read the scripture, who've never engaged in any pious activity, who have never any done anything at all in terms of spirituality, even those outright sinners, even they are now dancing and chanting in ecstasy. Purport, us. Right. So that's my purport. But, you know, so in that way, we can appreciate that now the Sampradaya is producing its fruit in the most amazing form. Now is the time, more than ever, when overcoming of Maya is easier than it ever was. Thank you very much. Any questions, any comments?